Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum and as always I'm joined by my co-host Matt Seddon. We've got a special London Marathon review for you today, so a bit of a bonus pod. How are you doing, Matt, first of all?
All good, man, all good. It was good to see the marathon back in action on Sunday.
Yeah, it made a nice change, didn't it? Just having the proper course, fans lining the streets, the mass races, everything. It was good to have it finally back. It feels like it's been, well, it has been a couple of years, but it feels even longer, I guess.
Oh yeah, it really does. You know, it's I mean, last year were good races with the elites, but I do just feel, you know what I mean, like you said, the fans in the course, it just adds to it, and it felt like a proper London Marathon, not just a road race again. Mate, where do we start? Men's race, and then we'll dissect the women's, shall we?
Yeah, perfect, man.
Yeah. Well, men's race, it was good to see a bit of a race. I don't know, for many people it might have been. Usually London Marathon has some big headliners, and I know we had quick guys on the start list, but for me and you, did you feel like it was just wide open and you kind of just didn't know what to expect at any of the elites? I mean, for me, I was probably back in Katata, who looked like he had a bit of an injury, hence why he finished sixth. But it was a weird one because for so many years, we've just had Kipchoge and Bekele hyped up. Or, you know, before that, it was Kipsang v. Kimeto. You know, we had world record holders hyping it up all the time. So, I don't know, it felt like a little bit of a...
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you, man. Like, I think it is a weird one. Like, whilst we've got these kind of, these really fast guys, and we see it in the results, like three guys run 204 is insane. But I think without your massive name, like, I think like Kipchoge is even not just big in athletics, he's just big in sport at the moment. Particularly like the way kind of athletics is in terms of road running and marathons is probably the most highly marketed as a sport at the moment. Without him, it did feel a bit like there was a bit less hype, I guess, in terms of the elite men at the top end of it.
Yeah, I'd agree. However, cracking race. You know, I thought the race was exciting to watch in the fact that we didn't know who was going to win, and fair play to Lemma. He got them tactics absolutely spot on. I always say to people, you need to just be as even or even, you know, negative split a marathon. Like, I really do think that's the way to go. You look at the world records, they negative split 30, 40 seconds, you know. However, they didn't do that. It was a case of just hanging on, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just on the quality of the race, like, I think it was really good and I was getting into it. But I just want to touch on the coverage because even for myself, who I consider myself to be kind of quite invested in the sport in terms of as a fan, I found it still quite difficult to follow. And that's myself. And I don't know, I don't want to speak for other people, but I think in terms of attracting new fans to the sport, like, would you even have had a clue what was going on, really?
Yeah, I mean, I had a discussion with a mate of mine and he said, you know, if you've just turned the TV on, you're probably turning it off again after about 5 or 10 minutes because yes, it's a London Marathon. But if they're showing the elites at the time, there's no context to the race at all. Mm-hmm. You know, Crammy and Paula do a great job. They really do a great job. They know their stuff. But yeah, it's just, you know, I think we need a few more graphics on screen. We've just got a clock, okay, and then we have to wait until they hit a mile marker before we know where they are or what they're doing. Why not have, you know, the mile markers, the kilometers or miles, whatever?
We'll just leave them on the screen.
Leave it on the screen. And then we should have like F1, where we've got the positions, because I know they've got their name on their bibs, but you can't read it.
Oh, and especially because we'd have been interested in terms of the British perspective, where we're not always seeing them in terms of how they're going back and
exactly.
forward. But I think most people who are kind of really keen on their marathon running, like myself, they'd have had their laptop out and they were looking at the split times as well. But why make it that hard for people to view? Like, I shouldn't have to have the TV on, or two TV, or a laptop on a TV, one where I've got the normal BBC One, one where I've got Red Button, and then another laptop myself to kind of get 5K splits. Yeah, it shouldn't be that difficult.
The weird thing is we've seen these graphics in the Diamond Leagues this year, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the positional ones and the pace they're running at. And I just think in the Diamond League, it's quite good, but it's not that necessary because it's a 400-meter track. You can see if someone gets overtaken and falls down to eighth. But on a marathon, it would have been amazing. Josh Griffiths, our boy, we've got to shout him out, did his usual, just worked through the field, you know, overtook most of the guys in that latter half.
Yeah.
You know, imagine if you could have seen him, you know, actually overtaking these guys, you know, through a graphic. So,
well, that's it, because I'm sure Josh won't mind me saying this, but I had a good conversation with him yesterday, like, just about the race, and obviously, like, he ran really well, came eighth, ran 2:13.39, not too far away from his personal best. And I said, I saw a little bit on the telly, just in terms of when he got dropped from that kind of group, and he kind of said to me, yeah, I just made sure that I knew the pace was a bit too quick for how I felt, so he kind of cut it back a bit. But we didn't get to actually see, in terms of the coverage on him moving back through and start working it to end up finishing second Brit in the end.
Yeah.
So,
You know, and as a purist, you know, I probably would have liked to see more of the elites, but that's an argument for another day. But yeah, back to the men's race. I mean, this Lemmer guy, physique-wise,
he looks pretty powerful, doesn't he? Yes.
You know, Paul Arnett said, you know, he was more of a stocky guy. But do you know what? I thought it was really good to see that. We saw a stocky guy win it. That Kipchumba, I actually don't know how tall he is. He's probably not that tall compared to...
You put him up to a normal,
you know, Joe Blake in the public. But, you know, it's really good to see that contrast in
physique. Think that's it, because I think that's what people always talk about athletics in terms of, as a sport, there's an event for every physique. But we're not even just seeing it as a sport now. We're seeing within events.
Yeah.
There's just different ways to run fast, and it doesn't have to be your kind of bog standard, what people consider... marathon runner. And I think it just shows you how people draw on different aspects, like their power and things like that, even in the longer events.
Yeah, I think if anyone's watched that race, that is probably the A standard to run a marathon, is what Lemmer did. You know, he sat at the back of the pack. When the pacemakers dropped out, he was still at the back of the pack. He chilled, he tried to take his time that first mile. But maybe that cost him, because would he lose out on 25 grand in prize money? He ran 204.01, and if he runs up 204, apparently he would have got a 25k bonus. So yeah, he's probably a big guy. But mate, to the Brits, that's what we want to focus on, really. Sesman, did you expect... I think he had a great run. Did you... what did you think he was going to run basically before? You know, do you think 212.58 is quick enough to be a leading Brit at the London Marathon?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I thought Sesman would run well.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought specifically about what time he would run. I thought he'd definitely go off at that 2:11:30 in terms of World Champs qualification. Because like if you look at it, if you're a guy who's gone to 3K indoors for the Euro indoors, if you're gonna make the decision to step up, you want to be running at or above the level you're currently running at. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what's the point? Sort of thing, because he's clearly shown that this year he can make teams indoors on the track. So you'd have thought, unless you thought you could step up and run to a next level, i.e. make a world team, you'd stick at what you're currently doing. So I kind of knew he'd go off at that pace. I think fantastic performance, like you say, to get first Brit. It's interesting, isn't it? You say, is it quick enough for first Brit? I mean, obviously it was on the day.
So
he beat a lot of athletes, a lot of British athletes, and I guess that includes Johnny Meller, who has run 2:10 before. So these guys are no slouches. But yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I think it's just tough when sixth place runs 2:07 and seventh place runs 2:12. It does highlight the gap between kind of the... I hate to kind of always go back to it, but that African dominance, I guess, in terms of the marathon events.
Well, yeah, you know, 5 minutes between the last Ethiopian and, you know, sixth and seventh place, basically, is a long way. But, you know, this year in London, you know, the Brits field was tainted a little bit because we had the Olympics.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the podcast with Mella, I thought it was fascinating to hear that he basically trained for a marathon three times this year. And obviously he was only competing one. You know, I do feel like this year has been rough for British marathoners, that the Olympic trial kind of got thrown on them when that wasn't in the plan going into the new year. So that got thrown on them, so they all had to do that. And then obviously some of them went to Tokyo. Obviously they're not here in London. So, yeah, I mean, like you say with Phil, an interesting point is I think, crazily, I think he's just as good as 3K indoor runner than he is a marathon runner when you look at it from the stats.
Yeah, in terms of just like time-wise,
when you look at it from the numbers. So is it worth him sticking? I mean, I would like to still see him sticking around cross-country scene. I would like to see him on the track for a few more years and maybe attack a 5K, which he didn't get to do this summer because obviously he was training for the marathon. But obviously it's going to be his decision and whatever he enjoys. But I think... yeah, with where he's at with the marathon, he's not... he may go on to set the world alight, but I do feel like he's probably got some more left on the shorter distances.
I mean, definitely with him, like he seems so versatile as well. And when we spoke to him before, he just loves racing and getting stuck in. So I'm sure we won't see if Phil does decide to just focus on the marathon as his main event, I don't think we'll see him go into like pure marathon blocks all the time. Yeah. I think we'll still see him get out for, he'll probably run road relays next weekend or whenever it is, him. So yeah. And he'll be out at all sorts of things. So I'm sure we'll see that. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's still a fabulous debut, really.
It is good. But I mean, you know, on that note, I feel like Britain's marathoners haven't done one yet. I mean, I guess you could say Jake Smith has done one. But I feel like we have a... It's maybe just me, like, just speculating. It's easy to say when people live there. But you look at Jake Smith, you look at... I think Mark Scott is due or will eventually run a very good marathon. So you know, for me, like those two guys, and you think we get Hawkins back as well.
Well, yeah, people like Derry, like they've
but
got
mate, let's
fast PBs.
Let's talk about the so Sesman was inside the Commonwealth time, okay,
and the European time,
and
yeah,
and the Euros, but obviously outside the world's time. And at the moment, when we look at that world standard for next year, apparently the deadline closes on the selection policy. It says it closes on the 28th of February 2022. Yep. So it leaves pretty much no one much time to go and do another marathon. I don't know what marathons are will be available in January, February time. You're going to have to do it somewhere where the weather's half decent and you're not going to probably do one before Christmas. So I'm just thinking, are we going to see the only people who are eligible technically for the world champs with the standard are Chris Thompson and Jake Smith?
Yeah, it's mad to think, isn't it, that those are the only two people who right now, if they go off a selection policy, have the standard, because it opened 1st of January this year. So all the guys, obviously Tom went to the Olympics, but Ben Connor and Callum don't.
So here's my theory. Do you think Jake Smith can get a world standard in either the 5K or the 10K? And if he can't, you know, will he go for the marathon?
I think... I don't want to say he can't. I think he's... If he's going to get one of them, he's more likely to be the 10.
Yeah.
But it's weird with Jake Smith, because I wouldn't want to say he can't do anything like the way... Some of the ways he runs and how impressive he is. But I think the marathon, I think, will definitely be his best event long-term, but it's whether it's his... best event now. And I'm sure him and his coach James C will have ideas about what they want to focus on next season, but I think you'd be a bit foolish to just not consider it when you do have the standard and there's only two of you right now.
I'd agree. You know, you look at someone like Hawkins, who is, you know, injured right now. Is he going to get a standard in before the world? But then again, with the world city, the world ranking system, to be honest, mean you don't know where any of these guys are ranked on the world ranking system. So, you know, because like you say, Phil's just debuted. But most of them aren't high enough and inside that. Yeah. So
just thinking about the standard of the running, though, obviously Phil is talking about him kind of being first Brit with 2:12:58. I think obviously it's not the same every year, but when Josh Griffiths obviously debuted himself, he was first Brit, and that was 2:14:49. So we're a lot quicker than that then.
I feel like London is a real hard one for the Brits. I feel like the Brits have a lot of pressure going into London. I also feel like the pacing groups, which are always designed. I mean, if you look at that pacing group Phil Sesman was in, right? I would argue it was probably too quick for pretty much all of them on that day. And I think the problem you have with marathon running, which Josh does so well, is you may have trained amazingly, but on the day, if you feel a bit tired, when you go and run, you know, 450 miles, what in training sometimes feel comfortable, and you try and run 450 miles in a day and you feel tired, then you should probably ease back. But I think the temptation there with these pacing groups doesn't allow you to.
Yeah.
So you get dragged at a pace, which may just be a fraction too quick. And this is why you always see, you know, basically these blow-ups and these slows in the second half, you know. But I do feel like the Brits, maybe they should just go 66 first half and then 65.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's your 2:11. You know, surely you are better to close out that last half and play it safe. But I know, you know, many of them, I think Mella had stomach issues as well. So, you know, lots of things go wrong in the marathon. But I do think London is a tricky one with the pacing groups.
Yeah, I think it's just tough when it is... is essentially a trial most of the time, and a race for a time. Yeah, yeah. Whereas, I guess like we really loved seeing the Olympic trials for the marathon being a separate event this year, and obviously that leaves people to just go and chase times wherever they like, and then rock up to the trials and kind of cement your place. And it does have a very different feel about it. Whereas when you're trying to balance multiple things, it's tough.
Yeah. Well, that's the men. We flick over to women, basically polar opposites. I mean, at the front was electric. It's kind of weird. We kind of say 204 and we kind of go, these days. But, you know, the women were electric, you know, two inside, 218. We had five inside, 220. And then, you know, Purdue coming 10th in 223. Mm. 10th. It's just, you know, such a stacked race. And like you said, they were such a large pack for quite a while. You know, one key athlete I kind of wanted to point out was that the Salpeter girl. Mm. Because she ran 218. This is one thing we didn't really touch upon on the men's as well, is she basically died a death in Tokyo and had a horrible run, you know, finished 30. I think it shows you how hard them conditions in Tokyo were.
For sure.
Them Ethiopian guys as well, they all DNF'd. However, you know, I think they DNF'd because they knew they were, you know, the London fields came out the day after.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Salpeter no got quite far into the race,
but
though,
Salpeter
didn't she?
Was clearly racing for a medal. Yeah. And I thought that's an amazing recovery. One.
Yeah.
And two, it shows you the level of shape she must have been in, which she's probably carried over on the Olympics. So it kind of shows you how high the standard was at the Olympic Games, but I just know that the results didn't reflect that, you know. So, but I mean, absolutely electric. I guess kind of, I mean, you could say went to the form, but obviously Bridget Koskaj.
You know, yeah, apparently she's had like a bit of an issue though, so I don't know. It's so hard to tell, and I think not to say that these athletes come here and just do it for the money, but I think if you do have a little issue, you're probably not gonna bother dropping out like you would for a track race, and just do another one next week when there is such high kind of appearance money and things like that. So it's tough to say, and we don't always know what is going on behind the scenes in terms of injuries and niggles and things like that. But yeah, I think like you say, two athletes running 217 is huge, because the female only world record is just 217.01 or 02.
Yeah, Katalia ran 217.01. You know, but you know, interestingly, again, we talk about pace groups. It was a bit of a, you know, controversy with the pacemaking there. The pacers were running 20 meters, or maybe not quite 20 meters, but you know, 10-15 meters ahead of that, you know, female only pace group, and clearly, you know, they were going on a cracking speed. And they didn't want to get dragged anymore. So it is, pacing is crucial. We know that. We know that. And I feel like what I'm trying to say is it's a tough decision to make as an athlete, whether you go with a pace that you know you can do for 15, 20 miles.
Mm.
And you just think, well, I'll hang on. Or do you, you know, take that almost like, you're not bottling it approach, but that safe approach. You do take the safe approach.
I do wonder how much the athletes actually speak to.
Yeah.
To the pace groups, or whether it's just agents
speculating
and people like that.
But mate, you know, the big story, Purdue, in cracking run. Look, me and you've got a lot to say on Purdue, but it's interesting. You know, we're seeing tweets come out. We're saying, you know, the selectors made the wrong decision. I don't think the selectors made the wrong decision written in regards to the Olympics.
I think it's so easy to look now and be like,
yeah, obviously,
oh Charlotte would have run incredibly well at the Olympics. It's so easy to do that. I think at the time, like, some people were like, oh, they should have selected Purdue, but it wasn't like an outrage.
Yeah.
So I don't see how it should become an outrage now that she's run this time, because the selectors themselves...
Well, people are going to improve, you know?
Yeah.
For example, I don't know what Sesman could go and run like 208, you know? In a few months, or next spring, he can run 208 and miss the World Champs qualification. Do you know what I mean? So it's not, you know, people are going to improve, but I just feel like at that time, you know, she DNF'd in a few marathons pre, and she hadn't improved her fitness. And I know you can say you're in good shape, but I do feel like it was the fairest way at that time to pick that team. So, but there was, you know, there was a lot of controversy, but yeah, she came out and basically showed them. And I think that was a performance Charlotte this is the frustrating thing with athletes. She knew she had in her for like
maybe
a couple years. She knew she had a big performance in her. I saw an interview with her, you know, and she was saying her training partner went and ran, you know, 2:25 in London, and she knew she was training better than her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I think, you know, Purdue knew she had a big performance in her, and she finally delivered, basically.
Yeah, and fair play to her. Now she's got kind of
all options.
The decisions she wants in terms of, we always talk about this, three champs next year, and it's probably, the marathon's probably the only event where athletes aren't even considering doing doing more than one. So I guess it's up to her whether she wants to focus on the Worlds, the Europeans, or the Commies, but she's well inside the time for for all of them.
Yep. Absolutely well inside. And you know what? I wonder, I did see, she, you know, I think AW, wasn't it, was saying she was fourth in Delhi 2010. Mm. Maybe she will attack a Euros or a Commies and try and pick up some silverware in comparison to a World Marathon. You know, it's obviously well known, the World's Marathon isn't as big as a as an Olympic marathon or even, a marathon major. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, she may want to go and pick up some silverware and maybe chase another fast time next year and pick up some silverware. But it's going to be fascinating to see. But, you know, the rest of the Brits, they're all well inside their Commonwealth standard, you know, and Euro standard as well. Who do we have? Rose Harvey, 2:29.45. Samantha Harrison, 2:32. Natasha Cockrum as well. And interestingly, Becky Briggs, very young to be doing marathons. She obviously did the Olympic trials, and now she's come out, you know, run a PB 2:34.34 as well.
Yeah, I mean, she ran pretty well at the Olympic trials for a long period of the race, and then obviously suffered in the latter stages, which you see with a lot of people. But I think even having the intent back then to go with that quick pace before shows that she's clearly confident with her training and things like that. It wasn't like she just went out and tried to kind of not run slow, but didn't go for the standard last time. So, yeah, it's good to see people getting after it, I guess.
Yeah, ladies' marathon running is just booming. Like you say, you know, we got six ladies there. We have three who went to Tokyo who weren't there. Obviously, Eilish was pacing. I wonder when she's going to...
Yeah, I think it'll be... similar to Mark Scott, it'll be a few more years before we see...
But she did a great job pacing Purdue, and mate, what was fascinating was the fact that, you know, Eilish was like willing Purdue on the whole way.
So a great picture of them racing. I don't know if it was English schools or maybe not English schools. It was just maybe you know the Junior Diamond League they do, or it was some sort of old, they used to do. It was an old pic of Eilish and Purdue racing, probably like 10 years or more ago. And I was like, wow, that's a nice picture to kind of then be pacing now. But on that, just to discuss the kind of the girls who have the qualification, because we mentioned Jake and Tomo having it. So for the women for the Worlds, it's just Purdue and Steph Davis, am I right?
At the moment, yeah, just Purdue and Steph Davis. Natasha Cockrum, very close as well. You know, just on the outskirts. But, you know, like we say, one of these people are going to run another marathon.
And I think that's the thing. Because this year, all the marathons are in the next month or so because of all the postponements. So it just depends if there's going to be something. It's not even, they can't even wait till March. It's got to be February. And in February.
20th of February it closes, apparently. But these things are always changing. So, mate, looking ahead. So that was London. Looking ahead, we've got road relays this weekend, which is going to be fascinating. I'm probably going to tip AFD for the win on the men's side.
A strong team, mate. You got the inside source?
Yeah, mate, I've got some inside source. I think that team's probably published, but they won't mind me saying. I think they've got, you know, Jack Rowe, Ben Bradley, Ricky Harvey, Josh Grace. Goodness, who else have they got? Ellis Cross.
Oh, we mentioned
Adam Clark. They've got Adam Clark, who actually paced this weekend. Yeah, that's their six, sorry. So, you know, and I'm just thinking, Jesus, they're all sub 14 minute 5K guys. So I can't see them losing. I feel like Leeds men would have to go some to get on there.
Well, I'm sure Phil will be
cracking to get back off. So anyway, that's what we got to look forward to. Cardiff Cross Challenge the week after. Cross Country's around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, the big one we're looking forward to is Liverpool. I know it's still
a
bit of time away, but we saw a selection policy come out for that, and I think we tweeted about on the podcast account. Well, we're so happy to see a trial put out for the mixed relay, because I think that's been needed for the past few years. Yes. It's been quite a grey area in terms of whether it's based off the 1500 rankings, but you still have to do a cross country, which is obviously 8K to 10K. So mm-hmm. it's based off like what people run in the summer, and then if they kind of rock up to an early cross race, they're kind of in the mix. Whereas now we're seeing, I think it's going to be 20 guys and girls, obviously in different races, based off 1500 times. And I think there's also an expression of interest. So if people don't have the 1500 time of 3:41, they can say,
or 4:17.
Yeah. Yeah, they can say why they think they're in for a shot. So I guess someone, if they had a quick 3K time, they're a steepler, 5K guy, or someone who just runs well, maybe at Mansfield, perhaps. I guess they can.
Yeah, I mean,
set their stool for why they should be in the trials race.
Yeah, that 15. I mean, like you say, the men's 1500 this year was ridiculously stacked, and there's a lot of boys who could do that, who could do that trial. Do you know what I mean? I think we had near enough 20 inside, or 15 inside 3:40 as it was, you know. But a lot of quick boys, you know, they probably won't opt for it. So I think there will be people, you know, expressing interest just outside that 3:41 and from 4:17 mark and getting in that race. But, mate, how good is that going to be to watch? You know, we're going to get that's going to be at, 10th? That's going to be the first race, apparently. So it's going to be fast, you know, probably flat just around that first field. And then we're just going to go through all through the age groups and finish off with that senior men as well.
And I mean, particularly on the relay, just before we move on to the senior men and senior ladies, it's just, they're just taking top two from each. And if people decline, it just goes to the next one.
It goes down.
So everyone in the mixed relay team will have to be at the trial.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is really nice to see. Then for the senior men and senior women, it's top four. And then there's two discretionary spots.
Yeah.
But they have said with the top four, so if you come fifth and then one guy or girl drops out and doesn't choose to do it, you will go up. So
they'll pick down the ranking.
So there'll be four that will get picked from each of the men's and women's teams that actually run the trial. And then there's two discretionaries, which history kind of shows that it is normally the top six pretty much that go, which I do like to see, particularly in cross.
I think, you know, there'll be a few in the NCAAs this year.
Maybe for the under 23 teams, like that's obviously.
Yeah, and but senior men's, it's going to be fascinating to see who's going to be doing that senior men's.
Yeah, I mean, maybe with it being like almost a return to cross country, we'll see a bit more than perhaps we do, because obviously sometimes we've got a lot of distance guys who sometimes do it and sometimes don't. Like I think of when Andy Bouchard ran obviously the Eurocross before. Like, I'd love to see kind of what we would consider our top 5K, 10K guys on the track actually churning out for these cross-country races, because that's what we want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, as always, we'll catch you on Sunday again. So tune in for that one. Take care.
Yeah.